you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, Johnny. Johnny.
Hi. I think my voice is a little bit better than it was on Thursday.
Well, let's hope, because it was 90 minutes of you hacking up a lung. My only update from When Our Another Shot is that I set up my tinsel tree, my white tinsel tree.
Oh.
And I set up this like Snoopy light thing, because my girlfriend's obsessed with Snoopy. So it's like you flick this little switch and music comes on, and then it controls the lights to go with this Snoopy music. She's
well,
very
that's
excited.
That's amazing.
I'm a great girlfriend, John.
You're a great girlfriend.
You should try me out sometime. That's all I'm saying.
Well, speaking of that, Matt is joining us this week. Matt's here from time to time. He's busy in behind the scenes. But Matt, welcome back to the show. Do you want to tell people why you're on today's episode?
Yes, thank you. I'm on today's episode because it takes place in Peekskill, New York. And I live in Peekskill, and you know, this murder was a case on Snapped, where we did a lot of the research. But it's interesting because when I watched it, the Snapped episode didn't say, you know, exactly where the murder happened, but it gave the street name. You know, the streets like kind of run all through Peekskill. And then when I started researching, I looked it up and I realized that my place is literally two blocks from where the murder happened. I could see exactly where it happened and where the body was found.
Oh my God. That's like a little bit dramatic,
that's
actually.
That's a little freaky, if you ask me. And are we confident that you're not the murderer in this week's episode,
right,
Matt? Like, what's the over-under on that?
Well, I've only lived in Peekskill for a year, and this murder happened in 2012.
Well, that seems like semantics, and seems like that wouldn't hold up in the court of law. That's all I'm saying.
Right.
Also, we should say that I did, because Matt wasn't on Another Shot, that I did call Matt 2 days ago to wish him a happy birthday, and I said, how does it feel to be 50? And it stopped him in his tracks, and he was like, I'm not 50 yet. And I was like, how does it feel to be 60? So,
Oh, dear.
I just... Even though it's Matt's birthday, I still don't give a shit about him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You're going to take any opportunity you can get.
I'm an equal opportunity hater of Matt. Let's be frank.
That's true, but happy birthday, Matt. I hope you had
a great birthday, Matthew.
Thank you.
All right, Darren, why don't we jump into this week's episode, and Matt's going to chime in about his neighborhood where this is apparently happening.
Yeah, right in his backyard, basically. Yeah. So like Matt said, today's show focuses on the town of Peekskill, New York. It's about a town of like 25,000. My hometown in Montclair was like 35,000. So, you know, a moderate-sized suburb, I guess.
Yeah.
Not big, but not small. It's about a 50-minute commute into New York City. But, you know, like I said, it's famous for being home of Matt the bartender. Like, signs everywhere in Peekskill about Matt living there. Like,
That's true.
A parade every year. It's a little crazy. So, you know, this is a very important town. Now, on October 3rd, 2012, a call to 911 was made by a Peekskill mail carrier. Here's a snippet of the audio. John, why don't you be the dispatcher
and
I'll be the caller on this. We haven't role played in a while, and you know I love it, even though it's short.
I love a good role play. Okay.
You're dispatcher, I'm caller.
Okay. Peekskill 911, what's your emergency?
There's a dead man on the street.
on Pine Street.
Yeah, he's in his car. He looks like he probably had a heart attack.
Scene.
Good job,
Here's
John.
The thing, Matt, are you thank you, and same to you. Matt, are you comfortable with fans knowing that you basically are admitting to living two blocks away on Pine Street?
Yeah, well, I live in the forest, so they won't be able to see me very easily.
I'm sure the friendly neighbors are feeding him all sorts of deer food and
like
some
apples.
Sort. That he can graze.
Yeah,
sure.
That's fair. Okay, sure.
Well, the first responding police officer, Liz Folk, told Snap that she saw a man slumped over in his car, and she recognized him as 53-year-old Terry Camper. Now, the Peekskill police chief said that Terry was well-known and was one of those guys that always had a smile on his face. Liz Folk added, "The guy that will wave at you every morning, that you will see at the local deli, that you will grab a cup of coffee, say, 'Hello, how's the family?'" So he's like this neighborhood guy, like, you know, local small town. Now, Liz quickly opened the door to check Terry's vitals, and after touching the left side of his neck, her hand was full of blood. Not a good sign. Apparently, Terry had been shot twice in the back of the head. He was clinging to life. This also makes sense of why he was, like, slumped over his car if he was shot in the back, just the forward momentum. He was clinging to life. EMTs arrived, pulled Terry out of the car, and started performing CPR immediately on him before rushing to the hospital. And Liz said, quote, "I was just like, oh my God, he has a family, you know? He has a wife."
Oh, gosh. Yeah, very gruesome at the very top of the show. Well, Terry was born in Mississippi and moved to Peekskill when he was 5 years old after his dad got a job at a nearby hospital. His sister said he had a lot of friends growing up and they'd be over at the house a lot. His cousin described him as an easygoing, lovable, playful, and outgoing person. After graduating from high school in 1978, Terry started his own taxi company. Quote, "There was nothing else he wanted to do but drive the taxi," said his sister. You don't really hear that often. You don't hear people starting taxi businesses. At least I don't. I mean, they're probably common in New York or in surrounding areas, but I just had never heard of that before.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm sure it happens. Yeah. I know you have to like spend like $500,000 on getting those like cab medallions, you know, because there's only a finite amount of cabs in the city. I don't know if you knew that.
Oh, yeah, I didn't. I have heard of that.
Yeah, that's been regulated since like the 30s. It's insanity.
Well, with Uber and everything, my God, there's just endless cars on the road now. But
yeah, thank God. Yeah.
Yeah. And his cousin said, quote, "It meant everything to him," and quote, "He loved being out in the public," end quote. So not really a homebody like me, Darren. You know, I love quarantine. There's nothing else I love than these four walls.
Oh, yeah. This is like the best year of your life.
This is 2020 is amazing, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Well, Terry met a woman named Beatrice Ingram at a train station and drove her home in White Plains. Beatrice Ingram had been born in Queens in 1952. As a teen, she fell in love with a neighborhood boy named John.
Uh-oh.
Not me. John was a bad boy, according to Snapped. Ooh. Again, not me. Very, very, like, churchy.
You're a good old boy.
Yeah, I'm a good old... I'm John Boy, as they say. But yeah, he was a bad boy, according to Snap, who had been involved in drugs. And eventually, Beatrice began to turn to drugs, becoming addicted to cocaine. John ended up getting incarcerated, and Beatrice moved on in her 20s, getting married and then having two girls and a boy. So we're setting up a lot of backstory here for you guys.
Yeah, it's John was a bad boy. Got into drugs. Yeah. It's not a great start here. But Beatrice's marriage had ended by the time she was picked up by Terry Camper in his cab. She was 50, 7 years older than Terry. So Terry's 43 at the time. When Terry picked Beatrice up in his cab, she opened up about being in a detox program and trying to turn her life around after struggling with drug addiction. Got to give credit to these people doing this.
Absolutely,
pretty incredible. Now, Terry ended up getting her number, and she'd call him from time to time for rides. All right,
fair.
I get it. Little business. Now, before long, Terry and Beatrice began dating, and he took her to meet his family. After she finished her detox program, Terry's mom helped out, and Beatrice lived with her for like 8 or 9 months. So Terry's sister told Snap, quote, "They really liked each other. I was like, okay, this will work. They enjoyed each other's company. All seems to be good. Everyone's life is turning around here."
Right.
In 2002, Terry and Beatrice got married, and they became the Campers, which is kind of cute.
Yeah, it is
campers.
Cute.
And Terry became an instant grandfather because Beatrice's children had kids of their own. So a step-grandfather. Now, according to the family, Terry spent a ton of time with those kids, and they loved him. While he still loved driving a car, he was able to spend more time with his family because he had other workers also doing runs for him while he managed the taxi business. So it sounds like his business is thriving. You know, he's kind of the big boss. Point. He gets to do other stuff, and he can, you know, have this fleet of cars, if you will, for his company.
Right. Yeah, totally. Okay. So now back to kind of current day with the whole, you know, murder, like we were talking about at the top of the show. Well, not murder yet. Technically, he's clinging on, you know, to life here. But by the time Beatrice had made it to the hospital after Terry had been murdered, he was dead. So by the time she had gotten there, he had passed. Terry's family also came to the hospital. No one could figure out why someone would want Terry dead. And this is a common theme I feel like we've heard on the show. It's like, a lot of these murders are sort of completely surprising to families and friends of the victim, which is always like a tragic and unsettling thing. Terry's sister said, quote, "It was just too shocking. He didn't bother nobody. He didn't do anything to anyone," end quote.
Common theme though, right?
Again, it's like, yeah.
It's hard to say because even though, like, you know, they say a lot of like rapes and murders happen to somebody that you know. It's rare for it to be kind of this random act of killing, which is why the first suspect is always the husband or the sister or somebody close.
Totally,
but like, you know, if I look back at certain things, it's like, you know, you're not paying attention to, unless something is like completely ruthless, like you're not necessarily paying attention to other people's attitudes towards you. So it's kind
of hard to
figure out, you know?
Because, you know, again, we've heard this so many times, who would want him dead? Well, you know, sometimes it's not even about what this person has done, the victim. It's usually, you know, other people's problems or jealousies or insecurities.
Exactly.
You know,
or
I think
money
about that,
or this and that or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And I think about that episode we did recently about the real murders of Orange County, you know, where that was just like not even the right person they were targeting. It's just, it's all so bizarre how these things tragically unfold. But anyway, police first suspected that Terry had been shot as part of a robbery because Terry's wallet had been found empty at the scene. But as police began to speak with family and friends, they discovered that Terry often had someone riding with him while he worked to keep him company. Also, probably just a good idea in general, you know, like to have, you know, if you can control that and you can have somebody ride along with you. I mean, we hear every once in a while about these taxis and these rideshare companies where some really heinous, terrible things have happened, you know, like in or right after a drop-off.
Oh, God, yes.
Ugh, it just makes me unsettled, you know.
Although I will say, like, and granted, like, certainly taxi cabs in New York City, like, they get treated horribly and people are horrible to them, and you know, and sometimes it's vice versa, you know, not everyone's a great guy or whatever, but like, would you feel more or less safe, I guess is the right word, if like you called an Uber and there was another person
two
in the
people,
front seat?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if I'd feel safer with that. I mean, for the driver they might feel safer, but
right,
as the
totally.
passenger, I don't know that I would.
No, I don't know either. Did I ever tell you about the time I punched somebody in New York about a taxi?
I think you did, where you were like, this is my cab.
Yeah, so I'll just tell it really quickly. So, you know, I was on the corner. I hailed a taxi. Okay, I'm in downtown, somewhere in Manhattan. And clearly the taxi came directly to me. Okay, it was like, say there was a stoplight
or
something. It was very clearly and unequivocally my taxi. So I walk up a little bit to get into the car, and I am met about the same time with this guy. And I was like, oh, you know, I'm from Western Maryland. I don't have New York sensibilities. So I was like, oh, excuse me, sir. This is my taxi cab. And, you know, I kind of like open the door to get in. But listen, let me also say I'm a seasoned New Yorker at this point. It was probably six
you're not
so.
A damsel in distress, John.
No.
You're like, oh dear me, oh
no,
word.
Exactly. I wasn't fainting on my couch or anything like that. So I go to get in, and he was like, actually, this was my cab. And he starts to like pull me out of the cab. And I was like,
so you're
oh.
already sitting in there, and he's pulling you out.
So I'm about to get in, and he's pulling my coat. I'm like halfway in. He starts to pull.
No.
So then he starts to pull my coat, and I was like, oh no, don't fucking touch me, get off of me. And I was like smacking his arm off of me, and then like he just kind of shoved me a little bit, like almost like back into the cab, which I could have just gotten in. Yeah, I know. I could have just gotten in the cab and closed it, but I was like, oh no, you're not going to shove me. I get out of the car and I shove him into the light pole that is like right next to me.
John, why am I turned on right now? What's going on?
I know, a lot of people are getting turned on because it's very masculine. And so I shoved him like into the light pole and I was like, don't fucking touch me. And then I like got back into the car and we left.
What was his face? Like, did he say anything? Was he like shook it? Like what happened?
He was shook and I don't think he was expecting it. And how
old was this fellow?
He would have been like our age-ish, like maybe a little like around our age. Yeah. Like I don't even honestly remember. I just know he was around our age. But then, so anyway, we get in the car. My adrenaline is pumping. By the way, let me also just say, in New York City, you just never know if someone's got a gun, someone's got a knife. You know, I'm in Manhattan. You got to just be generally aware of some of that stuff. And, you know, so I was a little bit like amped up. I had like a lot of adrenaline. And I asked the cab driver was kind of giggling, I think, because he saw what was happening. And I was like, just to be clear, I was like, you saw me, right? Like that guy thought that you came for him and you came over to me. He was like, oh, no, it was definitely you. I saw you. And that's why I pulled over to the side of the road. So that's my story. It was a full out brawl. And I think I was an anointed New Yorker that day because I feel
you immediately got so much tougher. I can't like imagine you.
I know. Here's the thing. There's such a persona, and I don't mean to play into this on the show. You know, I'm a nice guy. I like to say I'm a nice guy. Okay, sure. But listen, I'm also a New Yorker. I feel like all of us, Darren, you more than some, I feel like you probably know more about this. You have to keep your guard up in public, especially in New York. You never know what's going to happen to you. And if you don't, you know, sometimes you could be taken advantage of. So I'm a little more feisty than you might actually know, guys, is what I'm trying to say here.
Well, and I think it's good. I mean, for me, it's not a matter of, it's like having your guard up, but it's also really of like being aware, which is why on Thursday when we were talking on another shot about those ridiculous $9,000 AirPod bud fucking noise canceling. Yeah. I was
AirPods
like,
Max,
noise canceling in New York is the stupidest thing you could do because it makes you unaware. Like it's one thing in your house, but if you're going on the street with noise canceling, you are literally asking to be robbed. And like, that's not to say that like people are getting robbed every second of the day. Like New York City is the safest big city, but at the same time, like you're making yourself very, very vulnerable. You know what
and
I mean?
There's
like,
risk involved. Exactly. If you can lower your risk, however you can lower your risk, the better is essentially the gist. But yes. So that's my little story, Darren. Do you think I could like beat somebody up for you? Is that what I think we've landed on here? Is that what?
Yeah, you're like macho man Thrasher. Like, I mean, listen, honestly, and Thrasher is a great WWE, like,
yeah.
Wrestling name?
Stage name. Yeah, yeah.
Like Slasher the Thrasher or Thrasher Slasher. Just something to consider, John. You might be in the wrong industry.
I was just going to say, listen, you know, I might have a cool last name. I didn't pick it, but I also listen to the Spice Girls. So there's a lot. It's all about balance in the world. I will say, we'll keep going here, but Matt also has some really interesting Subway stories where he kind of hulks out and rages himself, but maybe we should save that for like the end of the show because we're a little behind on schedule here. But
yeah, go for it.
If you're listening to this, chances are pretty high that you're a fan of true crime, right? Well, I think you're going to be interested in hearing about a thrilling new podcast that's full of twists and turns. It's called Case Closed, and each season it looks at a new murder from crime to conviction. All of the crimes on Case Closed have already been solved, so you're never left wondering who really did it. This season of Case Closed focuses on a close-knit community shrouded in mystery, the Amish. Barbara Weaver was known to be a loyal wife and mother, but her husband Eli had a reputation for breaking the rules. He had a number of affairs with women that he would meet and seduce online. So when Barbara was found killed in her own bed, all eyes were on Eli. Until someone else entered the scene of the crime. Sex, betrayal, and cold-blooded murder are waiting for you on Case Closed. Listen to Case Closed wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
Back to Terry. As I said, police had first suspected that Terry had been shot as part of a robbery because his wallet had been found empty at the scene. But as police began to speak with family and friends, they discovered that Terry often had someone riding with him. We mentioned that as well, Darren, and we had a conversation about that. Usually it was Beatrice, but he had other friends or family who rode along with him as well. On the day that he was murdered, Terry's friend Ruth had been riding with him, and she had answered his phone for him. A man had said, quote, "I need a ride from Pine Street," end quote. While the rider couldn't be identified, they found two shell casings in the car, and they determined the gun had been a .22 caliber handgun. Police also noticed that Terry's cell phone was not at the scene. They were able to contact the cell carrier and found out that the phone wasn't in Peekskill at all. It was across the Hudson River near West Point.
What?
Yeah. Is West Point the Naval Academy? I thought that was somewhere else. Maybe that's just the name. Matt, I'm going to need you to chime in here. Which West Point is this?
So West Point is the military academy. It's the most established military academy. Most, like, you know, 5-star generals or whatever, like, go to West Point. And it's been around since, like, the Civil War. And it's, like, all of that area. So Peekskill is basically the start of kind of like the Hudson River Valley area, you know, and West Point is across the river from Peekskill, not that far away. It's like a 20-minute drive, probably. You know, George Washington lived over there. Like, it has a lot of history. It's really cool. And I should chime in about Peekskill, too, and say that it's just an interesting city. You know, it's like, it has a lot of potential, but it kind of, I don't feel like it's ever sort of, like, met its potential. You know, like, it feels like a little down and out, but at the same time, it's so close to New York City. And it is an actual city, you know, like, you kind of feel like, oh, it's a small town, but it feels like a little city, you know, like, it has some big apartment complexes, and it has, like, a main street, and a couple of streets where there's restaurants, bars, and stuff like that, and it has amazing views of the Hudson River, and then across that river, directly across the river, is Bear Mountain, which a lot of New Yorkers go to and go hiking, and the views of the mountains and the river are just really stunning. So I don't know. Peekskill's like kind of cool, but it could use some improvement.
I've been to Bear Mountain before, and it's actually really nice. The way Matt is describing is accurate. But Matt, you know, as you live there, I'm wondering, would you describe it as one of those towns like that's up and coming or not even there yet necessarily?
You know, I would say it's not quite there yet. I feel like for a very long time, it's, you know, like, it's hard to tell. Like, you could say it's up and coming, but people might have said that 10 years ago, and it really, you know, like, there's so much that they could do with that. There's a riverfront. The Metro North train station drives right into Peekskill, you know, it's a 50-minute ride from Grand Central. They don't have, there's miles of, like, hiking trails in the wilderness. Stuff. They don't connect the train station to where you can hike and, or mountain bike and stuff. If they did that, if they had trolleys or, you know, something, like, or trolleys to the main street, there are some actually cool restaurants and bars there. And there's, like, a minuscule little scene. I'm talking minuscule. But if they just sort of, like, tied it all together, the train station with the bars, restaurants, and the hiking stuff, I think lots of people would come from New York City.
Interesting.
Wow, I mean, he should run tourism at Peekskill.
I was just going to say.
Christ. Okay.
This episode is sponsored by the Peekskill Tourism co-op.
Seriously. Well, let's back to this murder that happened in this lovely stretch of town.
In this beautiful little town. My thing is, I really did not know West Point was in New York. I, for some reason, thought it was, like, near D.C. or in Virginia, so that is news to me, embarrassingly.
Oh, yeah, no.
And by the way, I also have been up in Peekskill once or twice, and it is so beautiful. I agree with what Matt was saying. There's so much potential up there. But anyway.
I'm running for mayor.
Oh, my right. God.
There you go. So watch out, people. Matt's getting into politics. Anyway, detectives were able to pinpoint the phone to a wooded stretch along the highway, maybe where Matt claims he lives.
In the forest,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, in the forest. An officer repeatedly called the phone while detectives searched the area, and one of them heard it ringing in some of the brush. And then out popped Matt. No, that didn't happen. But they did hear it ringing.
I mean, this easily could be Matt. That's all I'm saying.
So far, like, all evidence is pointing to that, yes.
With access to the phone, though, investigators were able to see that the last call it received was from a burner phone, which is never a good sign. A burner phone is not a good sign. Now, while a name couldn't be associated to the phone, they were able to contact the burner phone's provider, who let them know that in addition to Terry, the owner of the burner phone had also called a woman named Sandra Dolman. Okay?
I have a question. So a burner phone, do you have to, like, give up your, like, information? Like, because let's be honest, people who are buying these burner phones probably, at least my assumption is, they may not always be for the greatest reasons. I mean, how many burner phones have we talked about on the show?
I mean, I think the general stereotype is that it's usually for drug deals. You know, you see it kind of on The Wire and, you know, and all these.
Right.
And, like, Better Call Saul has it, which is a spinoff of Breaking Bad. I don't think you have to register anything. I think that's the point. It's like a prepaid phone with minutes on it. That is a number that isn't loosely related to anything. You know, back in the day, it would be like a kind of a calling card. You know, when you travel abroad,
that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
People didn't have those same, like, international cell phones. So it is a way to kind of keep anonymous, but it is like a prepaid phone. So I don't think they have, like, your, you know,
they
your
don't
address
register
and everything.
Your blood type and everything.
I don't think so.
Okay. Maybe I'll try to buy one just for the fun of it.
Oh my God, can you call me on a burner phone?
Yeah, I'll call you on my burner phone, yes.
So police next went to Sandra Dolman's house, showed her the number, and she identified the number as belonging to her friend John Murray. Hmm. So John had just gotten out of prison after serving time for two murders, which
very casual.
I know, and I'm like, what kind of murders is this guy getting out on? And there's two of them. So he lived in the town of Newburgh with his wife, who was a minister. Also crazy. Like, what is happening? But people also find religion and find God in prison.
Well, that's
true. We don't know. Investigators were particularly interested in John Murray's Newburgh residence because Newburgh is across the Hudson River. And to get from Newburgh to Peekskill, you need to cross the Bear Mountain Bridge, which has cameras that capture every car that crosses.
Can I also mention, just so people know, the Hudson River isn't like a little like river that goes through the town. Like, it is enormous and, you know, not easily crossed. I feel like, you know, I think of a river in my hometown, the Potomac River. It's known. It's part of history in a lot of ways with George Washington and things like Matt was talking about. And it's, you know, you could swim across it in 5 minutes. It's super easy to get across. The Hudson River is like a quarter mile wide. I don't know, something huge like that. So I just want people to know that might not be from New York that it's a very huge river in New York.
Yeah, it's not like a moat. It's a fucking river, people.
It's huge, yeah.
It's huge. And a Peekskill police detective told Snap, quote, "We were able to observe the vehicle, which we believe to be John Murray's. It crossed the Bear Mountain Bridge approximately 1 p.m., heading east towards Peekskill. And then we had that same vehicle coming back across the bridge towards Newburgh at approximately 2 p.m. Mm. So an hour or so. Now, less than 10 hours after the murder, detectives went to see John Murray at his residence in Newburgh, and he agreed to go down to the station. John said he was in Newburgh the entire day, but John's attorney told Snap, quote, they had very clear footage of the car, of its license plate, of a person who fits the description of John Murray. So that's not good. Still, detectives had nothing but circumstantial evidence against the convicted murderer and no motive for why he'd want to kill Terry Camper. I mean, we haven't even really related these two guys yet.
That's true.
And because of this, and it was only circumstantial evidence, they had to let him go. So looking further into Murray, detectives contacted the New York State prison system and were able to obtain his telephone logs.
Yeah, so it turns out there had been hundreds of phone calls between John Murray and Beatrice Ingram when he had been in prison. More than 900 calls had been made over the last 11 months alone. Now,
okay, wait, I got to figure out like how I got to do the math on this as you riff. I'm going to do the math on this.
Okay,
go
ahead. Okay, do the math. I'm going to just say, you know, like, you know, everyone has a different experience with phone calls. I don't know about you guys listening, but like, don't call me. I don't love to talk on the phone unless there's like business. You know, Darren and I will cold call each other because we usually have something businessy to talk about. But in the day of text messaging and Snapchat, and my God, my Instagram DMs are just blowing up all day long from friends and people. It's like there's so many different ways to communicate these days. Don't call me. I talk enough on the show.
I know. I don't like it either. And don't leave me a voicemail, people.
And don't leave me a voicemail.
Stop leaving voicemails. Text me and be like, hey, I called you. I want to just chat. Like,
right.
And I hate people that text, hey, stop. Stop.
I'm going to do that now. But did you do the math? Did you figure out what?
Okay. So if over 11 months, let's say every month has 30 days, right? Obviously, we know that some have 31. One is 28, 29. So if you take 11 months, 900 calls, every day, every single day in that 11 months, there was 2.7 calls made between each other. That means almost three calls every day for 11
months.
Who
has time for that? I certainly don't. By the way, this is what you're getting, guys. This is the hard-hitting investigation that we do on Martinis and Murder. Darren will divide on air for
you. I can fucking divide, people. But at the same time, I gotta say, like...
Yeah.
I would when Nadine and I were distanced, we certainly talk that much.
That's true. No, that's true. Especially in the very beginning where it was like, holy shit, this all like hit us like a ton of bricks at once.
I think I think the thing that gets me is the prison thing. Like for them to have that much conversation in prison.
No, I know.
Like, you know, like I thought they limited that to some extent. You know what I mean?
And don't they cost money too from prison? I feel like you have to have a certain amount of money. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't know. But no, I agree. I mean, it's a very weird 900 calls. I don't think I've had 900 calls in the last 5 years of my life. You know what I mean? Like, that's just such a bizarre number, 900 calls. Well, anyway.
Yeah, that seems like just an egregious. Guess.
I guess. Yeah, sure. Do you have any division that you would like to include?
Matt can't do math.
I will admit that I cannot do math at all. But what I wanted to say, just a couple of things. One is the Snapped episode referred to Beatrice as Beatrice Ingram kind of throughout, but she is now, other news outlets refer to her as Beatrice Camper. So during this time over the last, 11 months, it's worth noting. She was married to Terry and she's Beatrice Camper. And so she's making all these calls like while she's married. But the other thing I just wanted to point out very quickly was, I'm just like in hearing you guys talk about it right now, it's so impressive to me what the Peekskill police have done, because a day hasn't even gone by and they figured all of this out. Mm-hmm. And think about like Peekskill, I'm sure that it's not like a massive police force, like the chief of police is in here working on it. And one day goes by, they get Terry's cell phone before it dies. They have officers calling it. They only know the general location. It can't be pinpointed exactly. They have officers combing the side of the road. They hear the phone because they're calling it off the hook. They find it. It's just crazy. And then, they with the burner, they find the last call, they locate the person, they identify who the caller was, they figure out that who he's been corresponding with in prison. I mean, all within like a day.
Well spoken, like a true candidate for mayor, if you ask me. Someone loves the Peekskill Police.
I mean, literally, don't you just see him? Yeah, exactly. Don't you see him with like a top hat being like, ladies and gentlemen of Peekskill? Like, that's how I'm picturing him. Yeah. It's crazy.
I was just going to say, our police force is excellent at Peekskill.
No, it is a good point. You know, one of the things I feel like we've talked about from time to time, Darren, is we've learned that not every police department has the same utilities. So for a small town like this to be on it so quickly is pretty impressive. Matt does make a good point. Take a drink.
Oh, Lord, yes.
I just was also thinking, I just had this vision. I was kind of zoning out for a second of Matt, like with an abacus and his hooves. Like doing you know what I mean? Like trying to like add and divide.
And did you say abacus because he's so old?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Okay, good. Do we all have that? Okay, good. Sounds good.
We're caught up. Mm-hmm.
Okay, caught up. Got it. Okay, so anyway, Beatrice had also made numerous visits to John in prison, and the two had been exchanging letters for the last 10 years, the same amount of time Beatrice had been married to Terry. Okay, this isn't looking good. This isn't adding up very well on Matt's abacus, is what I'm trying to say here.
Good. I like that one, actually.
You like that one? Okay. Yeah. I want to get an abacus now just for the show so we can add it up, if you will. Investigators learned from John's friend Sandra Dolman that the two had known each other in Queens way back as teens. They were teens in Queens, if you will.
Stop, John.
John's attorney described him as charismatic, handsome, and funny, as many attorneys describe me as well.
Me too.
Yeah, and Darren, for that matter. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But not Matt. He'd spent 30 years in prison after being convicted of those two homicides that we had talked about in Queens. Oh, good, Darren. There's a train going by as well. So for all the fans listening, I know
toot, toot.
You know what's funny is I have a good friend from high school that listens to the show named Julie. Shout out to Julie. And she actually lives right down the road from me. And she's probably listening to this being like, oh, yeah, I know that stupid train every single time. Every time John's recording, that train's going by.
Hilarious.
Anyway, sorry if you hear some trains. It's just going to have to be what it is. Anyway, Terry's family thought he and Beatrice were both in love with one another. But Terry's cousin said he did notice a change in Beatrice over the last few years before the murder. He said, quote, it's just the changes in her. She would fix up different. Her hair, clothing was different, and always going somewhere on the weekend, end quote. Now, this is the opposite of me. I don't fix up. I don't do my hair. I don't go anywhere on the weekends.
Well, let's not lie to our audience members here, John. We've seen you in a man bun. We've seen you in a little moni. That's
but
a male
pony. But do you know what
pony.
That is? That is a moni. That is me not doing my hair. That is me, like, literally pulling it out of my face so I don't have to do anything with it.
But well, yes, that's a slight effort.
Slight effort. You're right. Beatrice said she was visiting her daughter in Yonkers, but Terry's cousin thought she had someone on the side. Terry himself was growing suspicious, according to his sister, but he loved Beatrice and wanted their marriage to work out. According to Terry's family, Beatrice had become mean to him and would talk down to him. So this sounds like a crumbling relationship, if you ask me. Terry's sister said, quote, she got to the point where every time he'd say something, she'd yell and scream. And I'm like, why is that? End quote.
Ooh, that's never good. Recipe for disaster right here.
Absolutely. Another, you know, on the abacus, it's really adding up for as a disaster, basically.
That was good. If I had a snare drum, I'd be like,
Poodum-tsh. Thank you. Maybe Megan can add that as a sound effect. Megan,
oh,
go ahead.
I miss
we'll
my
right.
sound effect board too much. You know how we love that thing.
Miss that thing. Well, anyway, another sister told Terry he didn't have to, quote, take abuse like that, but he remained dedicated to trying to make his marriage work. On October 4th, the day after the murder, Beatrice was brought in for questioning.
Okay, so Beatrice is the one to watch out for right now.
Yes.
And when she denied knowing John Murray, the Peekskill police chief said, we know we're onto something here because this is a blatant lie, right?
Of course, yeah.
Teens
right.
and queens. So
teens
while
queens.
Yes, right. Well, they weren't. I just like saying teens and queens.
Martinis in Marqueenies? Okay, sorry. Let's keep going.
No, please stop, John. You're sorry. Getting okay. Matt level here. Now,
I don't know what's in my drink this week. But
while Beatrice was being questioned, detectives also had a search warrant for her apartment, and they recovered a box that contained hundreds of letters of correspondence between Beatrice and John. John had been sending her love letters from prison almost daily, and when confronted with the evidence, she admitted not only the affair, but that she had conspired with John Murray to get her husband out of the picture.
Oh,
and
okay.
Beatrice said it was John's idea. But still, why? A detective
why?
said, quote, I think the guilt was weighing on her. She couldn't handle it anymore. A weight was lifted off of her. She definitely seemed very remorseful. Both Beatrice and John were arrested. John Murray's trial took place in April of 2014. Police officer Liz Folk said that Beatrice, who had come to testify against John, had aged terribly in the year and a half since she'd confessed. You know, stress puts that on a person.
Yeah, it really does.
And if you look at, like, President Barack Obama, like, if you've ever looked at, like, how he looked, and granted, it's 8 years, so of course he's going to age there, but just, like, he was stressed, and he aged,
most presidents,
still very
sure.
handsome, I'm just saying, still very handsome.
He's arguably more handsome now. I'm just going to say that, and we'll keep
This is why I hate men. They just look better. Well, quote, she didn't even look like the same person that I had seen before. This process had taken a lot from her, said Liz. Beatrice took a plea deal for testifying against John, and according to LoHa.com, Beatrice claimed that she helped John determine where her husband would be the afternoon of October 3rd, 2012, which was on Pine Street in Peekskill. John called for the cab and then shot him.
Interesting.
I still don't know why, though.
Yeah, there's still no why here. Matt, I wanted to know if you, like, do you know exactly where this happened? Like, where the cab, I guess, was found?
Yeah, it was parked in front of a certain address. Mm. If I remember correctly, it's 118 Pine Street, but I can't remember exactly the street address. But it was parked right outside that street address. So I went and looked at where it was, and I walked by it sometimes. Now I'm always like, yeah, this is where Terry got murdered.
That's terrible. That's similar to, you know, we had one of our first episodes was that Skylar Niece episode where which happened in Morgantown, West Virginia, where I went to college. And I definitely think about that. I drive by, and like I had mentioned, my friend owned the house that one of the killers lived in, I guess. And like I had been in that house, you know what I mean? It's just weird to be around that energy. I'm big on energy, so you know, that's definitely a part of my perception of the world around me as well. Well, anyway, John's attorney said he was adamant that he did not commit the crime. John maintained that he was being charged based on the fact that he had a bad prior record and he was being railroaded, which, by the way, happens. Let's be honest. We've seen so many exonerations through, Darren, I'm forgetting the name of the, what's the organization that we love? Innocence Project. There's been so many examples of things like this happening that the Innocence Project has unearthed. And let's be honest, there was no hard evidence against John. There were no eyewitnesses. There was no DNA evidence, which is always the biggest indicator, really. There was no firearm recovered.
Which, as we know, is very key. It's like no body, no weapon. Like, it's hard to solve a case with that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. The jury reviewed letters John had sent Beatrice, many of them sexually explicit. They also listened to tapes of prison phone calls between the lovers, some of them erotic and discussing having sex. When Terry got out of prison, the two immediately met up and turned their fantasies into reality, despite the fact that both of them were married. A year before Terry's murder, Beatrice had boosted her... Here we go, Darren.
Here we go.
Boosted her life insurance policy on her husband to $100,000.
At least it's she's always clever enough to do it a year before and not like 3 days before.
Right, a couple days before.
Right.
Well, she and John had discussed Terry's life insurance a number of times during phone calls while John had been incarcerated.
There's the motive.
That's kind of the motive. Yeah, that's where it's starting to become a little more clear here. While John's attorney said, quote, there was a conversation that takes place in which John tells Beatrice in so many words, you need to up this, meaning Terry's insurance policy. And in response, a few days later, Beatrice calls John and tells him, look, I did what you asked me to do. I changed the insurance policy, end quote. I mean, maybe I'm just so naive about prison, and I admit that I am. I mean, do people understand that this stuff is being recorded and that, like, that is one of the dumbest things that you can do?
I don't think people realize that, though.
Yeah,
like,
I guess they don't.
You know, well,
I mean, I don't even know if this exact conversation happened on the prison phone, but I'm just saying with 900 calls in 11 months, surely there was some, you know, example.
Right. It says something. I mean, you know, those things are always recorded. I think they even say it like right up top. So it's just,
and even letters. Aren't letters and things coming in and out of prison the same
thing?
Yeah,
they open it up and read it and everything. So
yeah.
At least to my knowledge. Well, the defense argued that it was Beatrice who was the driving force behind bumping up Terry's life insurance. They said John had ended his affair with Beatrice recently, and she had become obsessed with him. That's right. I'm using the word obsessed. Now, the defense claimed Beatrice committed the murder herself and framed John by throwing the cell phone between Peekskill and his town of Newburgh. She wanted to spite John for dumping her, the defense claimed. So both Beatrice and John were blaming each other for Terry's murder.
Well, this doesn't look good.
With Beatrice's plea deal, she got 15 years to life in prison for setting up the murder of her husband, according to LowHUD.com. John Murray was found guilty of first-degree murder and sentenced to life without parole, according to Patch.com. So he got the harsher sentence. The Westchester DA noted that the conviction and sentencing reflects the third separate and unrelated murder that this defendant has committed during his lifetime, according to Patch. Yeah. According to CBS New York, Terry's sisters, Ed, it's important to mention that he was already in prison previously for two. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's not going to be helpful to his sentencing here. Now, according to CBS New York, Terry's sister said, quote, "I'm going to miss him. He didn't have to go like that. You don't want him. Leave him. You don't have to kill him." The Peekskill police chief said, quote, "To have such a premeditation involved, to have plans being made for so long to do this, keep in mind she had the insurance, you know, changed a year previously, she's just as guilty as the man who pulled the trigger. There's plenty of opportunity for these two to say what we are thinking here. You know, this is horrible. We can't do this. No, they kept chugging along and they executed these plans and they executed Terry Camper. You know, that's just pure evil."
Yeah, wow. What a story, though, because I keep going back to the no evidence. I mean, yes, of course, all of the conversations they had certainly do add up, and especially with the life insurance. I mean, how many of those of our shows have been revolved around life insurance policies? You know, I don't know. That would be a tough one for me if I were on the jury based on the conversation, you know, the information we have here.
Well,
on today's
and like
show.
You can sort of, you know, I'm not saying justify in any sort of way, but if it was this crime of passion, if you got into a heated debate, you had a blackout, if you were drunk, if there had been infidelity, something for a year previously, and then for her to kind of almost, from what we know, potentially, you know, either frame or set him up to do the killing and then walk away, it just seems cruel. Yeah. It just seems, right, and that's sort of the point that that Terry's sister said. It's like, you didn't have to go like that. If you don't want him, then leave him. Like, you just divorce these people. Like, and I know obviously she wanted the money, but like, there's paper trails to this shit, you know?
Yeah, well, and also the other thing that comes to mind is, and I don't know if this was explicitly mentioned in our information that we got today. By the way, Matt contributed greatly to today's episode, so thank you, Matt. You know, did she know about the two prior murders? Because I don't know that maybe she didn't even know about that, you know, with him. I mean, it's hard to imagine that she wouldn't.
You'd think she
but
would, or you think she'd look it up or something.
Yeah,
you know what
right?
I mean? Like,
you would think
Jesus.
So, but yeah. Well, yeah, that's it for the show, for our story. Follow us on social media and let us know what you thought about today's case. Jay Thrasher, Carpe Darren, Matt the bartender. Matt, do you have any final thoughts about your neighborhood killing?
I do. I will add one thing, which is when I was doing the research, you know, I looked up the people involved and just to see what they look like and everything. And something did strike me, which is Terry looks like he was pretty out of shape. You know, like he was a really good guy. He was a little out of shape. And John, you know, the convict, looked like he, like, sits around and, like, you know, lifts weights all day in prison. You know what I mean? Mm. And John, like, was mentioned, like, he definitely looks like a handsome guy. And I just feel, it just made me feel gross, because I just feel like Beatrice was, you know, attracted to this convict. You know, and we've heard this over and over, that, like, I don't know what it is. Why are women, like, throwing themselves at murderers? But anyway, you know, I think Beatrice was attracted by him, and he was sending her love letters, and I think she found all this very exciting. This is my hunch, you know? She just found it all very exciting. They were sexually explicit with each other on the phone and in writing, and I think that contributed to her. You know, yeah, the money was a motive, but I think she just probably had this, like, fantasy that she was gonna, you know, get all this money, and then she was gonna, you know, run off with her, you know, hot new man or whatever, and live this life, and it's just so absurd.
That's actually a really good point, and I think, I mean, you know, who's to say what we think Beatrice's thought process was, but I definitely think that what Matt just said is an entirely real, probable possibility.
Yeah, absolutely, and And Megan, can we please isolate the audio where Matt says, "And John was a really handsome guy." I would really appreciate that.
You want a repeat loop of Matt saying that? That's like
not just complimenting.
Like, you want the opposite. You want me saying that, sweetie, not Matt.
Either way, listen. We're in quarantine. I'll take any compliments I can.
Yeah, right. Exactly. At this point, we'll take whatever.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, Darren, let's do some quick listener shout outs before we finish off today's episode. I'll do the first one. I wanted to say happy birthday to little Maximus. He is a newborn baby, Darren, who was shared in our Facebook group by a dedicator named Heather. He's 6 weeks early, according to mom, but things are looking very good. They're hoping to have him home by Christmas. We just wanted to say congratulations and best wishes to you and your family, Heather. I'm sure not the easiest of times to be giving birth, let alone 6 weeks early, but we have a bunch of dedicators in our Facebook group that are supporting you. So,
and can
congrats.
I just say Maximus is the
cool
cutest
name, right?
Name. It is
I
so
love that name.
Cute. Maximus is going to be Maximus Prime when he
Maximus
grows up.
Maximus Prime.
And we're all thinking about you. Glad that things are looking good. Congratulations. Yes. And we're
congrats.
Definitely thinking about you.
Darren, people had a big reaction, I want to say, before you read your listener shout out to you. Answering a question on last week's Another Shot about relationships.
Oh, well, Tiffany in our Facebook group was happy for my answer to a question about relationships, saying, yeah. Is anyone else just a mushy mess of happy for dad and her new love? Just me? Fair. Tiffany, if it's just you, you are the best looking dedicator we've ever had. Let me just say it flat out. You're the smartest, best looking, kindest, sweetest, most successful. But seriously, Tiffany and the rest of the dedicators who have been reaching out to me, it like warms my heart that it warms
it
your heart
sweet.
That my heart is warm.
There you go. I also love the line, happy for dad and her new love. It's
what's
like
the
pronoun.
What's the
dad
problem?
Dad and her. Just
yeah,
so,
what's
I love
the
our
problem,
group.
John? It's 2020.
Well, hopefully in 2021, mom and his new love, whoever that may be, will be a
whatever
thing.
The new Funko Pop is, we just hope
I am
that
a mother.
We just hope that mom gets the appropriate Funko for Christmas.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I appreciate that. Anyway, lastly, happy 900th birthday, Matt. We love you. We hope you had an amazing week. Sorry we can't be in our studio where usually Allie would have, I'm sure, cupcakes.
Oh, my God.
Our lawyer, yeah.
She's the best. Matt, did your kids get you anything for your birthday? Like, did you do anything for your birthday just before we punch you out of here?
No.
Wow. Special.
Wait,
it's
Matt,
really
can
special.
Can I mention our quick conversation that we had, or you don't want to?
Good.
No, I was talking to Matt on his birthday, actually. We called each other about something. And Matt was like, yeah, I'm with my family. They were going to get me a cake. And I was like, no, don't get me a cake. So Matt is a little bit,
he's a little bitter Betty about
his
birthday.
He's a bitter Betty a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Jesus, Matt. Like some light and love a little bit this year, huh? Like, Jesus.
Yeah. Listen, I get it, though. All right. Matt's signing off, I guess, for the day.
Yeah, he's done.
We'll
I
see
love you,
guys.
Johnny, and we'll see you guys next week.
I love you, too. Yeah, see you guys next time. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.